video games don't need Hollywood in that, again, we virtually have, outside of physical crew, every skill set that you already need to make something incredible. I mean, video games have DPs, multiple. Like, just because we don't call them DPs doesn't mean that we don't have artists who are placing lights really specifically to get a tone. Video games have LUTs, which, if you're not familiar with a LUT, is basically a filter or a color grade, I guess is the easiest way to explain that. Many things that are already used in films, as games get more and more cinematic, we have someone on a dev team already doing. That vision is already there. One of the things that I'm working on right now is a live action sort of short for a studio. And they actually storyboarded the whole short in engine. They're not like going to be on set when we shoot it, but they did all of the storyboarding themselves in engine, and it's fantastic.
Sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap by Sifter, a video game industry interview podcast. I'm Chris Button. In the entertainment industry, a triple threat refers to someone ridiculously talented at singing, dancing, and acting. So what does that make Alana Pierce? The Australian video game writer, actor, content creator, film producer, and one-time boxer. A quintuple threat? Ahead of her appearance at Alt Games, Alana spoke to Sifter to discuss all things indie development, what Hollywood can learn from video games, and the importance of community.
Hi, I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And I'm Kat John.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 26th of April.
Assassin's Creed Black Flag is back with the remake finally confirmed.
Xbox is winding back the frankly ridiculous prices on Xbox Game Pass.
And Australia's eSafety Commissioner has slapped Fortnite, Roblox, Minecraft and Steam with a please explain.
Plus, we give you a preview of the most interesting games that are releasing this week.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
Alana, thank you so much for joining Sifter for this interview today. Very exciting to have you in the country for Alt Games. To kick things off, you're a multi-hyphen talent, performer, creator, developer, writer. How do you describe what you actually do these days? It's quite the extensive resume you've built up over the years.
I've had conversations with people I'm friends with where I ask them what I think I should tell people I do for a living when asked. I really have no idea. It's a big struggle. I mostly say I'm a writer because that's what I spend most of my time doing. So I'm currently full-time writing on a video game. I just haven't announced what game it is yet. But also all of the content creation that I do, I write all my scripts. And then a lot of the film production stuff that I'm doing, I am also writing the scripts, or at least consulting writing on the scripts. So majority of my working hours are spent writing. So I still call myself a writer, but I understand that I'm confusing.
And how do you sort of follow your various pursuits? Because I know it's been well documented that your love of sort of games media, growing up with games media, got you into writing about games. Since you've launched into acting, writing for films, you've got the film Charred Pictures as well. How did you sort of decide, or how did you get into, I suppose, pursuing all of these different disciplines along the way?
A lot of them happened by accident. And the reason that I continue with any of the pursuits that I've fallen into, like acting was absolutely by accident. Whenever someone asks me for advice on how to become a voice actor, I always try to say, I can't tell you. I was effectively got here through blatant nepotism in that my first performance was Gears 5, and that happened because Rod Ferguson, who is the director of that game, listened to me on an Xbox podcast I did at a company called IGN called Unlocked. And he just approached me at E3 one day and was like, we have this character. I'd love to have you in the game because I guess I did silly voices on the podcast. That's not a normal way to get into voice acting. And my first performance there was very bad. I also had CD Projekt Red reach out about the same thing. That was also quite bad. And then as people kept asking, because they'd seen me from whatever video thing, just game devs had become aware of me, I decided to actually try to learn and get better. So still a work in progress, but not a normal way to do something. But the answer to how I pursue all of the things that I pursue is, as a person, I just really love learning. I would say that that motivates me more than anything else in my life, is I feel immense satisfaction, or fulfillment, I guess is a better word, through learning new skills, learning from people who are much smarter than me, working with teams who have, you know, talents that the day before I met them, I wouldn't have even known existed necessarily, which is certainly the case in AAA game dev. So I'm always going to want to just keep progressing in different creative fields, just because I find it very rewarding. And I think the way that I approach a lot of the things I do is also just, I want to work with cool teams of cool people making cool stuff, and I'll use whatever skill set that I have that is going to be helpful to them in any way to try to do that. So I don't feel the need to limit myself. I'm sure, again, I understand it's very confusing. Writing is still my main passion and the thing that I care about the most, and thus I spend the most time doing it. But I do also really like producing. Acting is a fun thing to do, even though it's not something I'm like aggressively pursuing in any way. But I guess, I just find working with all of these different people and all of these different teams just incredibly rewarding. And it definitely gives me access to people, like I said, who are often way, way smarter than me, which I think is one of the best things you can do in life. Just be the idiot in the room wherever you can, and you will grow so much as a person.
And continuing that ethos of doing cool things with cool people, the thing that brings you to Australia at the moment is Alt Games, which is a relatively new sort of grassroots games festival in New South Wales, highlighting local creators, but also bringing in international creatives to share their knowledge as well. I'd like to hear your perspective on a couple of things around Alt Games. One, which is, what do you think is the importance of these grassroots events in terms of building community and, you know, bringing people, you know, from different game development backgrounds together? What do you think is so important about these grassroots events?
It cannot be understated how important this kind of thing is, especially in the indie game dev scene, which I think is actually very good in Australia in terms of collaboration. The games industry is obviously facing a lot of hardship right now. It's very difficult to get funding from the AAA to the indie level. There has been studio closures and layoffs, and a lot of just strife across the board. So one is getting people together in person to show each other the things that they're working on or talk about the things that they're working on is the way that you keep people passionate. The minute that all of our communication becomes online, kind of as it was during COVID, we see a huge rise in hostility. People are very frustrated and stressed. And once you get to meet people in person and have those conversations in person, you re-inspire each other. And I think that there's infinite value in that particular thing. But it's also with game dev specifically, and especially independent game development, collaboration is sort of the reason indie games seem to be continuously getting better. Of all of the separate things that I've done in my career, I would say that the least amount of gatekeeping that I've ever seen is in independent game developers. If you ask them how they did something, they are so eager to tell you and help you do it. And we just have the ability to keep learning from each other and keep inspiring each other, and everyone is better for it. I think these things are incredibly important, not only, again, for morale and for people to feel that sense of community, but also just to learn from one another and thus to make better games. It's kind of a no-brainer. The value cannot be understated across the board.
And can you speak a little to how you actually got involved with Alt Games and what you intend to sort of get out of the event and what you'll be doing at the event as well?
Yeah, so they reached out to me and asked if I would be willing to give a feature presentation or a speech. And I mean, really, I was always going to say yes, A, because it's Australia, but B, because I'm from Brisbane and I'm currently in Brisbane. But really, my career started in the Sydney games industry because, at least at the time, it was sort of the only place where all the events happened. We had the team who made Fruit Ninja here in Australia, here in Brisbane. And now there's Bluey, obviously. And there are a few indie game dev studios popping up here too. But, you know, I started my career 12, 13 years ago, maybe. I was having to fly to Sydney constantly. It's the people in Sydney, the community in Sydney, all of the friends who I have, many of whom have gone media to game dev, who are in Sydney, who are half the reason that I am where I am today. And have given a lot to me across the board. Those are the people that I learned from when I was a teenager, who I now have the ability to go and thank, I guess. So there was just no way that I was ever going to say no, considering that that's indie games industry, which is definitely more national now, is how I got my start. And I mean, when I go to events like this, I mostly want to just take a walk around the show floor and see cool indie games. I'm not a person who usually goes to talks, because usually if I want to learn about something, I will ask someone directly, but I always want to see what people are working on, especially when so many cool games come out of Australia. We were talking before we started recording, but obviously we have Hollow Knight, which is crazy. But I mean, even like Untitled Goose Game really swept award shows when that came out as something that feels so distinctly Australian in personality. Framed, you know, there's a ton of games that have gotten a lot of international recognition. And I know there are more of those games that exist in Australia that just don't have the marketing. I feel like we're a very creative bunch of people. Aussies are very unique in their creative output, and I'm very proud to be part of the Australian industry. So yeah, I'm going to go check out what Aussie indie devs are working on for sure.
And speaking of sort of the local industry and by extension the local games media industry in Australia, which is quite small and does operate largely off the back of volunteer work and has done for many, many years, you're also giving back in another way with the recent crowdfunding success of the Continue magazine, which is really exciting. Great to see. Shout out to Mark Sterrells and Jackson Ryan, which is really, really exciting. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the importance to people of what something like Continue magazine represents and why you think it was such a successful crowdfunding campaign.
I can definitely speak to it personally and potentially assume that people relate to me, but I got my start in Australian games media writing for PC Power Play or Hyper Magazine. I actually at this point don't remember which one or who I wrote for more or whatever, but that was the first thing that I did that was paid, I think. It actually may have been Game Arena, which was, I believe, Telstra funded, doesn't exist anymore, shut down, because they all have been. And then it was one of those two magazines. My grandma still has the print copy of my review of Company of Heroes 2. And so that's where I started. It wouldn't make any sense to me to not want to celebrate and bring those things back. And I think there's also just something to having physical print magazines arrive at your doorstep. You know, I was reading Game Informer as a kid. Obviously, Game Informer's back in print too, which is awesome. And that, I think, probably was my first exposure to games media. I know that landscape is quite different now. People are on YouTube a lot, but that was my first time maybe physically reading something and going, oh, this is really cool. And I care about what other people think about video games. And I want to be in this community and I want to talk to these people before it even clicked to me that I could do it for a living. So we can inspire a lot of people with something like Continue. I think that Jackson and Sarah's are the perfect people to work on it. I've known them again since I was a teenager, which is crazy to think about at this point. And contributing to it is just, again, my way of wanting to thank the people who gave me any part of my career. They are offered to pay me, of course, but I rejected the fee and then instead having them pay an artist to help with the piece that I'm working on because I felt like I don't need it. But I recognize that things like this and Australians with these initiatives are the reason that I got my start. So hopefully I can pass that on to someone else who maybe hasn't been published in a magazine who now has that in their career as well. And yeah, I'm just so glad that they were doing it and really, really excited. And I'm not at all surprised that the industry reacted to that the way that they did, because it is how so many of us got started, or at the very least, what inspired a lot of people to get into the industry. And when it existed, was a really, really cool part of Australian games media, where it was really exciting to see who was contributing to which of those magazines at the time. And it was such a bummer when they shut down. So long live Continue.
Absolutely. I absolutely concur. And as someone who also had, you know, their first commission in, well, Hyper Magazine, which I still have on the shelf behind me somewhere, it's such a thrill that other people are going to have the opportunity to see their work in print. And as you say, the artist as well, because there's nothing quite like a really meticulously designed magazine spread. So that's really, really exciting as well. And kudos to you as well for helping ensure that an artist, you know, is involved with what you're doing as well. And that theme of giving is something that I'm noticing a fair bit, a lot in your recent work, Alana, particularly with Charred Pictures. And I was watching and listening an interview you did on MinMax recently, explaining a little bit about the ethos behind Charred Pictures, and you're keen to give back to an industry that has potentially been taken advantage of in recent years by Hollywood in terms of film and TV adaptations and a lot of the things. I suppose to sort of bring things back a little bit for people who may not know about Charred Pictures, could you please explain a little bit about what the project is and how it came to be?
Yeah, sure. So Charred Pictures is a production company that I have been working on for almost 2 years, but just announced last month. that is specifically focused on helping independent game developers create their own independent video game adaptations. There are a lot of companies making video game adaptations. My ethos is that we are helping game developers do it the way they would like to. My ideal is that I fly to the studio and we have a conversation that's akin to a writer's room where we figure out with their writers or their narrative team in a room what the outline is going to look like. If they have capacity to, obviously game devs don't have a lot of time, I know this, they write the script themselves, I just help them give them notes, and then, you know, maybe we talk to some of my friends who have written more traditional Hollywood screenplays. Obviously I understand these disciplines are very different, get notes from them. I want their artists involved, I want their musicians involved, where possible I want their actors involved. That is definitely the most complicated one because the mediums of voice acting and on-screen acting are very different, but I basically just recognize that there is so much talent in the games industry, and a lot of people who work in the games industry have to be so multifaceted anyway. They have to wear 10 hats. A lot of your writers on indie teams are also producers. They have to be, or narrative designers, or even designers in general. And I just keep getting this feeling that the games industry doesn't need Hollywood. Hollywood needs the games industry. They need our stories that we've already told that are so good, and that's why Hollywood's interested in the first place. So if there's an indie team who wants to just sell off the rights to their thing to make an adaptation, I would not accept it. My whole goal with Child Pictures and the team of people that I'm working with is helping these teams make what they want to make. And I'm really excited to see what comes out of it. I've already had so many really cool creative ideas. Faith the Unholy Trinity is the one that we're working in on production the most aggressively right now. And Adolf has been such a wonderful collaborator. He's so excited. And Brandon Salisbury, who's the director, is also just such a fan. And I think that that's so important. Like, he loves Faith. Couldn't be more in love with it. So it's just really nice having people who really care about something create something out of love. Because even if it ends up being bad, which I don't think it will, but if it does, it will still have all of the heart and soul that all of these people who really love it have put into it. And it's already been really rewarding having not even released anything yet. We do also fund independent features that aren't based on IP, both fund and produce. So I recently shot a movie called Godmother in December, and we will occasionally do original IP, but I'm being very, very, very picky about that. Like, it really has to be something that I read a script or I read a concept and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I have to work on it. And I really want to help this person make this specifically. So yeah, it's already been very rewarding and I'm excited to see where it goes and to see what, you know, indie devs want to do with their properties. Like, some of them have really surprised me in some of the conversations we've had where I expected them to say something and they gave me a completely different direction. And I was like, great, let's do that. Sounds rad. So I think we have the talent. We don't need to outsource it. And I'm kind of excited to prove that to the world.
And that framing, I've seen you mention it in, I think, nearly every interview you've done since announcing Child Pictures, about Hollywood needs video games. Video games doesn't need Hollywood. Could you elaborate on what you mean by that? Why does Hollywood need video games more than video games needs Hollywood?
Hollywood is really trying to replicate the superhero trend right now pretty desperately. You know, they are trying to Marvelify video games is really what's currently happening. They are looking for IP that has a guaranteed audience so that there's less risk when they invest in something, so they can get people into theaters, which has obviously worked in a lot of cases, like Minecraft, both of the Mario movies, hugely, hugely successful. Some cases where it doesn't work quite so well. But they need IP because it's less of a risk. That's really what it is. It doesn't mean they care, though. It doesn't mean that they've played video games. You know, I've watched people in Hollywood lie. People I'm friends with even lie and pretend that they've played something to get an IP so that they have something to work on when it's a video game. And it's infuriating. And they're so good at it because all Hollywood's like, you know, veneers and fake hair and they're all like so charismatic. And I feel like they get into a room with a game developer and the game developers aren't necessarily used to that. There is definitely a different sheen on someone who comes from the Hollywood world and they get kind of blown away and wowed by it. So Hollywood needs video games because they're desperate for IP right now, because it's less of a risk. You don't really get a Ghostbusters in 2026, which is such a shame because it's a perfect film, but too risky because it's not established. There's no guaranteed built-in audience. On the flip side, video games don't need Hollywood in that, again, we virtually have, outside of physical crew, every skill set that you already need to make something incredible. I mean, video games have DPs, multiple. Like, just because we don't call them DPs doesn't mean that we don't have artists who are placing lights really specifically to get a tone. Video games have LUTs, which, if you're not familiar with a LUT, is basically a filter or a color grade, I guess is the easiest way to explain that. Many things that are already used in films, as games get more and more cinematic, we have someone on a dev team already doing. That vision is already there. One of the things that I'm working on right now is a live action sort of short for a studio. And they actually storyboarded the whole short in engine. They're not like going to be on set when we shoot it, but they did all of the storyboarding themselves in engine, and it's fantastic. And they have those skill sets because they're just as creative, you know? So they're just not given the opportunity to be hands-on and to be involved in the way that I'm hoping to involve people. And again, very excited to show people the games industry is incredibly talented. And I mentioned this about the Game Awards a couple of times too, how it often feels like there's a lot of pandering where there's a Hollywood celebrity on stage where I would prefer to see Shuhei Yoshida, who's also going to be at all games. And it just feels like there's all this groveling for the games industry to prove that we're as good as Hollywood. And I think we're way cooler. The game devs are way cooler. You make such cool stuff. Not that I don't also love film, but yeah, I want game devs to stop looking at themselves as this slightly less cool younger brother, because I feel like that keeps happening, and be like, no, you're the cool one. You don't have to prove yourself to the industry. You make incredibly cool art, and it's just as valid and just as important to people.
Do you think that some of that also stems from, you know, this sort of tired cyclical conversation that comes up every 12 months like clockwork about are games art, or, you know, games being perceived as a less mature storytelling medium than film? Is that part of this perception perhaps?
Almost definitely, in that I feel like a lot of game developers still react to that as though they need to defend it, where I always want to be like, just don't engage when that comes up. You give it legitimacy by even defending it, you know? And that is certainly a thing, and I understand where those conversations come from, is really that somebody's bored. Like, that's really what it is. And it is interesting, because video games have so many design constraints that in some cases are inherently addictive, which you can view very differently to how you view film and TV. They're very, very different mediums, and comparing the two is very difficult. It's also, I guess, just that video games have been so inspired by film for so long, and still are, and probably will be forever. But I do think we're now also getting to a point where we're seeing games that are clearly inspired by video games. Like the most recent Predator film is a great example. It's super video gamey. There are parts in that movie that feel like they are out of Hollow Knight. Incredibly video gamey. And you're seeing that more and more often as well. So that's kind of the first time that that's come around. And I do feel like that conversation's happening less. Am I crazy? Like, I feel like it's kind of dying down a little, but to me, it just seems like somebody's bored and is trying to strike up an argument on the internet at this point.
To your point about films taking inspiration from video games without necessarily being a video game adaptation, I seem to remember, I think it might have been the director or someone involved in John Wick 4, there was an action sequence where I believe they mentioned that it was directly inspired by Hotline Miami, and there was another game.
Hong Kong Massacre? I think that's the one.
Yeah. Where they're literally taking visual inspiration from games to portray action as well, which is a really interesting way of approaching things, I think.
And I love it. And if I ever direct something, which I'm sure I will one day, I've done shorts here and there, but not a feature film, obviously, I would like to try to make it as video gamey as I can. In that, have you ever played Sifu?
Yes, I have.
I love that game. And there are so many interesting things that that game does with lighting. There's a passage when you're in the club level that you start walking down and the lights sort of flicker towards the end of the tunnel, and the music is in time with the lights, like the beat is going in time with the lights. And I've never seen a movie do something like that. That's like so distinctly video gamey, where you really specifically use light to direct attention in a direction and have sound design play at the exact same time. Not that films don't do that, but not in a video gamey way. And I'm like, I'd love to try and, like, if I do my, you know, references or like a pitch deck, use video games as references just as much as films. Because there's so many cool things like that that I feel like I very rarely see in film. That's like such a unique video game experience. It gives you such a good vibe and a very specific tone.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things you mentioned in the Min-Max interview recently is that since launching Charred Pictures, you've already received more pitches, more call-out, more demand than you can already take on at the moment. In terms of, is that heartening, I suppose, that there is such a strong demand for the model that you're trying to produce? And also, what sort of projects are people approaching you with?
I mean, I'm not allowed to talk about what people have approached us with. Legally, I'm not supposed to address that. But a lot of different indie studios. And yes, it's heartening because at the very least, even if I don't have capacity to take some of them on right now, we're working on 5 things right now. I'm definitely going to have to try and staff up more to get all of this made over time. But right now, we just don't have any money. So there's no way to do that. But I've had a lot of conversations where I've been like, please just wait. And I've said this before where, you know, you have Hollywood come to you if you're making an indie game and they give you this bright, shiny offer and you feel like you have to take it. There's no rush. Indie game devs do not have to rush to do any of these things. You can make it in 10 years and it will be just as valuable. I mean, they just made a Super Mario Galaxy movie. There's no rush. So even if it's not me and maybe someone else is inspired by this model and wants to do similar things, I know there are people doing similar things. Like I know that Jeremiah Kipp, who is the director of The Mortuary Assistant, very heavily consulted the dev on that adaptation. It's not like I'm the only person doing it. I'm just like trying to spearhead my whole thing is about doing it. So I would really encourage those devs to know their worth, know that they should be involved. They made the thing people love, and wait, like really do wait until you find the partner who's perfect for you. Because I promise if one person's reaching out, 20 more are going to reach out. There's no way that you get contacted by a studio unless a lot of studios also are going to end up being interested in you. There's a real battle for IP acquisition right now for sure. So I think maybe they don't realize the position that they're in, how much leverage or negotiation potential that they have. So wait until you get exactly what you want, because you really do not need to settle for less.
And what is an indie game or an indie series that you would either love to be involved with adapting or you would love to see adapted into film or TV?
Just because I love the world so much, but it's much more complicated, is Stalker. I know there is already a Stalker movie, very different from the games. Obviously the book series and then the games themselves, but I always really gravitate towards that tone and vibe in a lot of my fiction. If I ever, you know, write something in my own time, it's not uncommon that I end up having some sort of mask needed in a tunnel, you know, like there's just something about that always really, really gets me, about a creepy tunnel. And so yeah, Stalker's one that I'd like to have as my like pie in the sky of, I wonder what that would look like and how we could do that. Obviously not indie, but yeah, it's always in the back of my mind somewhere because I just think it's such a cool property.
And looking back to your career to date and what you're doing now with sort of the multifaceted approach to various disciplines, over that time and even now, whose work has inspired you or whose work across different disciplines currently inspires you?
I really feel like I can't answer that question, which I know is such a cop-out, because there's too many answers to give. You know, when I was working at Sony Santa Monica Studio, there were so many people that inspired me in so many different ways and whose lessons I still take with me. There are so many things that I learned from Corey Barlog specifically that are now like ingrained in my ethos of how I make or write video games that I could not separate, because the way that I learned things from him just have stuck with me as like, well, obviously this is the correct thing to do. Ariel Lawrence, also another person at Sony Santa Monica Studio, but there's too many. There are too many people for me to start naming them, and each of whom who I've learned different things from in different pieces. Mike Flanagan's a very good friend who has a lot of really good stuff to say about filmmaking and screenwriting, and Alex Magistro, who also worked closely with him, are people who, yeah, I think that there is a piece of inspiration to be found in every single individual person, is kind of what I mean. In that there isn't any one beacon of a human who sticks out to me. I think that that's kind of putting someone on a pedestal and you can kind of go astray there. But every individual person that I've met will always have something that I can learn from them. My mom, you know? So yeah, the answer is kind of everybody. You just have to look for it. Everyone has 1,000 things that they do better than you do, and things that they know that you don't know, that you just kind of have to take the time to listen.
And to bring things back to Alt Games kicking off this weekend at the time of recording, I know recently you've done some video essays on YouTube looking at a combination of the games industry in terms of the funding landscape. You've also looked at the tech industry, especially with a lot of the AI investment that's happening. And a lot of that is very interconnected in terms of where sources of funding are going. You even mentioned at the top of the interview that it is a tough time to source funding and investment for a lot of creative projects, whether it be games or film. So I want to know, what do you believe that game developers and creatives can do currently to weather what is a pretty tough storm in terms of trying to secure deals or trying to secure opportunities for their projects?
Yeah, look, I wish I had an easy answer for this. I wish that there was something really straightforward that I could give as a piece of advice, but it is an incredibly difficult time and I could give advice and then a studio could get shut down. You know, it's very, very difficult. I think realistically for indie dev studios specifically, as annoying as it is, the reality is I think they have to work on marketing from the jump. You have to be pushing your game on social media where possible, even if it's an early animation that's, you know, way previs, something very, very early that you can share, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, wherever you want to get an audience for your game. People are always really excited to see stuff work in progress. So again, crappy answer, but for indie devs specifically, I think that is my go-to, is you have so much more opportunity to get a publisher or to get funding if you have a built-in audience. The way to get that built-in audience is largely by showing people that your game exists well before it does, even if it feels wrong to do that or it feels like you should hold marketing back. Don't, because then you get a wish list, and that is really what you take to any of the indie publishers who will be way, way, way more willing to help you is a following or wish lists. And yeah, again, I wish that wasn't my answer to that. I wish there was something else to say. Certainly, I think going to events is really important, making sure that you stay passionate and you keep talking to the community and that you remember that we are an industry of really kind people, like incredibly kind, I feel like, in comparison to many other industries, who are very, very willing to share and collaborate. And just remember that there's a lot of humanity in it and a lot of people who feel the same way that you do and that are going to be willing to talk to you about how you feel right now, because stuff really, really does suck. But yeah, definitely stay engaged in the community wherever possible. Again, other answer for indies is market from the jump. If you want to have a successful indie game, you have to also be able to market it, I think. And yeah, wish that wasn't the case, but it definitely is make or break right now.
And to round things out, I want to get a little bit inside baseball for a second, because when I was brainstorming some ideas and questions for this interview, knowing that you've been interviewed many, many times before and have likely heard so many different questions about all the different things you've done over the years.
You've done a great job. I don't know if you've asked anything anyone's ever asked before. Great job.
Well, my partner, Laura, came up with a question which I thought was too good an opportunity to pass up. She said, why don't you ask Alana, what have you never been asked before that you'd love to talk about?
No, it's okay. I feel like there's a lot of things that relate specifically to narrative design that I don't get asked about a lot because it is very inside baseball. In terms of things like how to approach storytelling. Video game storytelling is a very complicated thing. In many ways, there are so many challenges that come with writing video games that I think are like seem very simple, but are much more complicated than people realize. Like, how do you write an emotionally grounded cutscene that relates to something that's happened in the game prior, that, you know, you've had all this character work and growth to build into this moment, when you can't guarantee that the person hasn't taken a month off? You don't know how long your player is gone without experiencing the story. How can you guarantee that they haven't forgotten something that happened early in the game that is then in a really important piece for a narrative moment that you're intending to have? How do you ensure that they're not pulling their phone out during a cutscene? There are so many really complicated things about video game storytelling that I'm always very enthusiastic to talk to other video game writers about, especially because everyone has kind of different solutions to these really specific problems. Like I was talking to a person who has worked on Diablo 4 on the writing team, and I had said to him, I was like, it might be really difficult to, outside of those cutscenes, which obviously Blizzard is so good at, to do any storytelling, because from everything that I've learned, players won't engage as much with a narrative beat unless they really see a face. The easiest way to like really get someone to pay attention, put their phone down, really get into the moment is an expressive face. You know, we missed a beef thumbnails, but it is what it is. People really engage if they see an expressive face. And that's the easiest way to build an emotional moment outside of school. It's like, how do you write Diablo in a way that you want people to pay attention when it's just text and largely, you know, the specific perspective that it is? And his answer was like, yeah, I'll let you know when we figure it out. Like, it's such a complicated thing that nobody's managed to fix yet, that there are so many conversations around it. I'm sure, like, obviously The Last of Us has done an incredible job, of that particular thing for as a great example. But that is specifically because they do it in a way that's cinematic or evocative of film. So there are games that I think tackle that in really interesting ways. I think Hotline Miami is a really, really good example of like how to get somebody engaged in a story and a tone. Sifu is too, actually. Of the different ways that people approach narrative design. There's no specific question in there, I guess, but that's the thing that I'm always really interested to talk about because it is very inside baseball, but it's also a lot more complicated for a lot of reasons than I think players realize. And when you sometimes see commentary that's like, this video game writing sucked, sometimes it's never because the writers are bad. Maybe occasionally, but very rarely. It's more often than not because there's so many design constraints. Like you write a cutscene and then you find out 6 months later the animation budget is cut, and so now they can no longer animate a quadruped or a bird or something that was relevant to that cutscene. And so you're 6 months ahead, and the other cutscenes are locked, and you have to rewrite the one in the middle to fit the other two. Like, it's just so many moving parts and pieces that, I guess your question, if the question I wanted there is, tell me one thing that's people maybe don't realize about video game writing. And then my answer is, it's so much more complicated than you think.
Absolutely. And Alana, I could easily chat with you indefinitely, but I'm conscious that we've reached time. Thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing what you've been working on. And yeah, I'm very excited that people get to hear from you at Alt Games as well. Where can people find you and your work online and at Alt Games this coming weekend?
Yeah, so at Alt Games, I'm giving a speaking session at 1 p.m. on Saturday, and then I'm talking to Shuhei Yoshida, which I'm really, really, really excited about. At I think 4 or 5 p.m. I should double check that, but also on Saturday we're doing a fireside chat where I'm just going to talk to Shuhei about his career, which obviously a lot of time spent in the industry at PlayStation, so I'm really excited to chat to him. My social media is currently in a transition, so it used to be I was at Char Alanazard at everything, but I'm trying to swap everything at the moment to at Alana Pierce, which has been much more complicated than you would think. Instagram and TikTok really don't want me to change it. So I'm having to like go through support systems right now for those two specifically. So they're still Char Alanazard. Everything else is Alana Pierce, but it's way harder than you would think to change a username, apparently. There's like a million flags. They assume I'm being hacked or something. It's wild. But it's either Char Alanazard or at Alana Pierce right now.
Excellent. I'm sure people won't have too much trouble finding you online. You're very, very active across a lot of platforms. But thank you once again, Alana. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Ever wanted to hang out with a bunch of Sanrio characters like Hello Kitty, Kuromi, and Cinema Roll? Well, you can with Hello Kitty Island Adventure, available on Apple Arcade. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
This has been Lightmap by Sifter, our video game industry interview podcast. I'm Chris Button, and thank you for joining me. Please leave a comment or rating on your podcast platform of choice. It really does help get our work out there. Sifter is produced by myself, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Kyle Poletto, Kat Jahn, Naomi Jackson, and Adam Christou. Mitchell Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni DiGiovanni is Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Mina Shamali for composing the theme music, and thank you to Audio Technica and Apple for their support on Sifter. See you on the next episode of Lightmap.